Today on Annenberg Radio News.
But they'll put themselves in all kinds of harm's way in order to feel good enough.
We take a look at the dynamics involved in hazing. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Monday, October 13th, 2014. I'm Charlie McGovern. A big one could be in store for Northern California. A new study suggests the area is overdue for a major earthquake. Mari Crowley reports.
This study by the U.S. Geological Survey found that three of the four fault sections beneath Northern California are loaded with enough tension to produce powerful earthquakes. Roughly 15 million people live in that earthquake zone. The main area to watch is the Green Valley Fault, which lies northeast of San Francisco and near the dams and canals that supply much of California's water. Researchers say the tension could result in an earthquake magnitude of 6.8 or higher, and they expect one of those faults to rupture in the next 4 years. Mary Crowley, Annenberg Radio Unit News.
Something is rotten in the state of California, at least according to the group Consumer Watchdog. The group is calling for the state attorney general to investigate whether taxpayer dollars were misused when California's health insurance exchange was awarded $184 million in no-bid contracts. A report on Sunday uncovered dozens of contracts without competitive bidding. The state health insurance agency representative says they followed all rules when applying for the contracts. Music came to the doorstep of a federal prison in downtown LA today. Music with a message of hope for the immigrants detained inside. Dana Beth Solomon has the story.
Halt the injustices, halt the deportations. Those were the words sung today by the band Los Jornaleros del Norte, the day laborers of the North. They're part of the National Day Labor Organizing Network, and they often bring their crusading music to the streets. But today's location was unique, a strip of sidewalk outside the Metropolitan Detention Center. Why here? To urge President Barack Obama to stop detaining immigrants and locking them up at places like these.
He already broke his promise of stopping deportations in the end of summer. Now he's saying that it's gonna be after the elections.
That's Claudio Bautista from the Day Labor Organization. She's frustrated that the government deports around 1,000 people a day.
That's a lot of hurt that the community is going through, and we're tired of it and we want it to stop.
About 75 people turned out in solidarity, dancing in the street with blue balloons. Some waved up at the detention center's tiny window slits. Others wrote the word fortaleza, or fortitude, in pink chalk on the roadway. Chris Newman from the Day Labor Organization hoped the event would spread awareness that detainees are sometimes treated like criminals.
The idea that somehow people's presence here is conflated with criminality is quite a dangerous assumption that's shared by a lot of people.
The music had its own message too. Raise Your Voice is the song acclaimed Chilean rapper Ana Tijoux chose to perform. This is what she wants to remind people.
Do not be afraid. These people want about us to not be organized, to not be here, to not be in community. And when people begin to think and begin to have a reflection about what is happening, about everything, we become dangerous.
For Tijoux and the day laborers, music is a weapon that can penetrate walls. Dana Beth Solomon, Annenberg Radio News.
With several New Jersey high school athletes scheduled to appear in court this week on sexual assault charges, hazing has come to the forefront. Mara Allen Dogan examines the effect it causes.
Nightmares, flashbacks, paranoia, irritability, sleeping. These are some of the devastating effects of hazing, according to sports psychologist Dr. Mitch Abrams. For Dr. Abrams, hazing can grow out of team building.
What you're really seeing is dynamics that have to do with a bunch of men getting together and acting stupid. But it has more to do with how groups of people attempt to indoctrinate and give a rite of passage to their new comrades that has a high risk of being abusive and potentially illegal.
Dr. Abrams says hazing, or any trauma, can bring victims closer together. And that can perpetuate a cycle in the victims becoming the victimizers.
It is so important for people to feel connected, to have an identity, have a way to have an instant social life, that they'll put themselves in all kinds of harm's way in order to feel good enough. And I think that what it roots down to is that we have a problem in our society with low self-esteem.
The University of Southern California Athletic Department clearly states in its student athlete handbook that it does not tolerate hazing, which is forbidden in the California Code of Education. The code defines hazing as acts that are likely to cause bodily danger, physical harm, or personal degradation or disgrace resulting in physical or mental harm. If a situation of hazing does occur, USC has procedures involving the investigation of the incident to determine the proper punishment. In Sayreville, administration officials responded to the report of hazing by canceling the season. Dr. Casey Cooper calls the response exceptional, extraordinary, and awesome.
In order for these types of things to truly change, the culture shift to really happen, we have to hold our student athletes to the same rules and accountability standards as we hold our athletes in clubs to, our students who are in clubs and participating in other events. This is still a school-sanctioned situation, and it should be a discipline and responded to in the same way as if it were a classroom situation or any other club situation.
With Sayreville Memorial High School shedding light on a taboo subject, it opens the doors for a shift in societal response to hazing. Mara Allen Dogan, Annenberg Radio News.
Dressing up in costumes has always been a favorite Halloween pastime, but one Bakersfield teen was arrested this weekend after taking the tradition a little bit too far. According to police, he dressed as a clown and chased other minors in the area. But he's not the only clown in town. Roving bands of clowns have been seen around the city, and Caitlin Plummer takes you into the midst of this squeaky-shoed epidemic.
Halloween came early this month for Bakersfield residents, especially those who suffer from coulrophobia. In case you didn't know, that's the fear of clowns. Clowns have been seen all over the city, some even wielding machetes or baseball bats. Since the first sighting on October 6th, the Bakersfield Police Department has received 20 phone calls about the clowns. Two of the calls were suspicious person reports describing clowns riding in the back of cars. Sergeant Joe Grubbs of the Bakersfield Police Department wanted to clarify what these Bakersfield clowns are and aren't legally allowed to do.
It is not illegal for somebody dressed as a clown to walk down the street or to stand somewhere and have their picture taken or to ride in the back of a car. However, if somebody is dressed up as a clown, or even if they're not dressed as a clown and they are displaying a weapon menacingly or chasing people with a weapon trying to scare them, that's illegal, and we do want to know about that.
One call was a broadcast from the High School District Police Department about reports of clowns on the Golden Valley High School campus. However, Lisa Kirsch, the Public Information and Communications Manager at the Kern High School District Public Information Office, says the report was a hoax.
With both the Kern High School District Police Chief and also the principal of that high school, and no clowns sighted in or around Golden Valley High School on Wednesday.
The clown hysteria has even grown to a point that some residents are accusing others of being clowns.
One of them we had was actually somebody that called in that was assaulted, and the person that assaulted, in this case it was a woman, she was assaulted by people that were accusing her of being a clown.
Both Sergeant Grubbs and Kirsch believe the clowns are a result of the recent clown photo project a couple carried out in Wasco, California. Grubbs sees a difference between the two incidents.
What the couple in Wasco was doing was absolutely a legitimate project. I don't know if it was for school or what it was, but it's still within their First Amendment rights to go out and take photos of a clown. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Somehow or another, though, it's morphed into this frightening thing, and probably because of movies and you know, our society as it is now.
Sergeant Grubbs believes there is more than one clown involved in these appearances, but there have been no further arrests. The clowns have not been seen since Saturday night. Caitlin Plummer, Annenberg Radio News.
The freshman 15. That's the common belief that first-year college students put on extra pounds as they adjust to college life. As Kylie Morgan reports, a new study suggests college freshmen should worry less about weight and more about a healthy lifestyle.
A University of Georgia study shows that the freshman 15 might be a bit exaggerated. Young college students, on average, actually gained only 3.5 pounds over all 4 years of school. The study also found most freshmen gained very little weight.
There is good data to suggest that young adults gain weight over the first 20 years of being an adult.
Researchers say that this weight gain is a part of growing into a young adult rather than a problem specific to college students. Medical Director Dr. James Jacobs of the USC Engelman Student Health Center says other research shows that gaining weight from age 18 to 22 is a trend common among all young adults, regardless of their student status. Dr. Jacobs also says weight gain is relative. 5 pounds can mean different things for different people.
We have to put it into the context of this, of the specifics of the individual student. And for some students, a freshman 6 might actually be a significant amount of weight gain that needs to be better understood.
At dining halls on college campuses, the myth of freshman 15 still prods students into keeping track of what they eat.
Personally, I try to always have a cup of water before every meal, as well as eating half a plate of salad before every meal, so that way I can get the healthy stuff in first.
USC freshman Ryan Lopez says he was worried about the freshman 15 coming into college and has gained weight since being at USC. However, researchers hope to shed light on a commonly held fear of weight gain among college freshmen. Kylie Morgan, Annenberg Radio News.
Taking a look at the weather this week, it's shaping up to be an idyllic week in Southern California. We're going to have high temperatures in the 70s and partly cloudy skies through the rest of the week, with lows at night dipping down to the upper 50s. Looking ahead to homecoming weekend, Saturday looks to be a great day for tailgating and football, with a high of 78 for the 3 p.m. kickoff against Colorado. Later on Annenberg Radio News, I talked to Planet Money's Alex Bloomberg about his new podcast venture and the difficulties of starting a company. The U.S. Supreme Court is a week into its new term. The justices will hear cases ranging from free speech issues to civil rights. Erwin Chemerinsky is a professor of law at the University of California, Irvine. His latest book, The Case Against the Supreme Court, examines the faults of the country's highest legal authority. I spoke with him about what cases Americans should be aware of this term.
One of the important cases on the docket is Alanis versus the United States. It involves when is a threat speech that's unprotected by the First Amendment. It involves a man who was going through a very acrimonious divorce. His wife got a restraining order against him. He posted very threatening things against her on Facebook. He later posted very threatening, vituperative things against his former employer, an FBI agent, even a kindergarten class. He was convicted of making threats in interstate commerce. And the question is that speech that's protected by the First Amendment? Another case that's quite important comes from Arizona. Arizona, like California, has an independent commission to draw district lines. And the question is that unconstitutional because districting has to be done under the Constitution by the legislature, or can people through an initiative give this to an independent commission?
You wrote last week that you were worried about a few cases that involve employment and voting discrimination. Why is that?
The Roberts Court has been consistently hostile to civil rights plaintiffs. So there's one case called Young versus United Parcel Service. It involves a woman who was pregnant, and she was told by her doctor not to be lifting boxes above a certain weight during her pregnancy. United Parcel Service actually has the practice that they would allow individuals, if they have other kinds of disabilities, to not have to lift those boxes above a certain weight threshold, but they refused to give the same privilege to the woman who was pregnant. And the question is that pregnancy discrimination a violation of federal law?
How do you think the court is leaning, or where do you think they will go on those cases?
Just a little over a year, almost a year and a half ago, in June of 2013, the Supreme Court struck down a key provision of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So if past is prologue to the future, one would expect rulings against the civil rights plaintiffs, but we'll see.
In your latest book, you took a harsh look at the Supreme Court. What are some of the conventions that you think need reforming?
The book is titled The Case Against the Supreme Court. And in the last chapter of the book, I propose many reforms. One is as simple as making clearer what the role of the Supreme Court is in enforcing the Constitution. One is to go to a merit selection system for Supreme Court and all federal court judges. I'd like to see the confirmation process changed. I favor term limits for Supreme Court justices, 18-year non-renewable terms. I favor changing the way the court communicates with people, including cameras in the Supreme Court. I favor having the ethics standards that apply to other federal judges apply to Supreme Court justices as well. I think we should have a recusal system where the judge doesn't decide for himself or herself whether to be disqualified.
All right, Erwin, thank you very much for coming on to the show.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Erwin Chemerinsky is the author of the book, The Case Against the Supreme Court. Looking for some good live tunes this week? Samantha Romero takes a look at who's coming to town.
There are a lot of great bands coming to town this week. Walk the Moon will be here on Wednesday, and Massive Attack is coming through on Thursday. If you're into punk, be sure to check out Osmutants at The Smell this Friday. The Melbourne, Australia act just released their latest record this weekend. Here's a quick peek at Freedom of Information off their new album, Order of Operation. Lead singer and keyboardist Jack Rococo talked about the inspiration behind their new sound.
We're drawing inspiration from everywhere, obviously, but I guess because we've been a band for a while, we're slowly discovering what our own sound is. A lot of the bands that we're like seeing on tour have also, like the aforementioned Lumpy and the Dumpers. I'm hoping our next stuff kind of goes down that route a little bit, you know?
For Rococo, their first trip to America has been pretty cool.
Absolutely phenomenal. Highlights for me personally, St. Louis and Chicago playing with Big Zit. Memphis was also a big highlight.
If you feel like checking them out, tickets will be $5 at the door at The Smell on Friday. Samantha Romero, Annenberg Radio News.
The Catholic Church made a major announcement this afternoon. Karina Halagian has more.
The Vatican called for the Catholic Church to be more welcoming to gay and lesbian members earlier today. More than 200 bishops collaborated on the document, which had said homosexuals had, quote, gifts and qualities to offer. Kevin Concanen, professor of religions at USC, explains why this is a big deal.
There are a lot of different kinds of people, both heterosexual and gay and lesbian, who are at present not welcome in the Catholic Church. And so I think what's going on here is the church here is making an outreach to a lot of different kinds of families.
Concanen talked about what led to the Vatican making this decision.
Well, I think in a lot of ways what's going on here is that Francis is trying to change the tenor of how the Catholic Church presents itself and deals with a broad array of social issues.
Although the announcement stressed the church still views homosexuality as a sin, it said they could see where same-sex partnerships are beneficial to society. Karina Halagian, Annenberg Radio News.
Last year, the popular podcast Planet Money wanted to explore the complicated process behind the simple idea of making and distributing a t-shirt. Listeners donated nearly $600,000 for a hugely successful project. But for Alex Bloomberg, who produced the project, it was also a revelation that dedicated podcast listeners have a monetary connection. Bloomberg has since quit his job as producer at This American Life and Planet Money to launch his own podcast venture. I spoke with him about starting a business around digital consumption.
I feel like there's an opportunity to create, you know, a lot more podcasts than what's being created within public media. And one of the first podcasts that I'm making is a podcast about the starting of my podcast company. I've been documenting everything that I've been going through. I've been documenting pitches to investors and conversations with my wife, and my co-founder and I, you know, recorded our equity negotiation, and I've been putting it together into a sort of a somewhat regular podcast. Comes out every 2 weeks or so, and it's called Startup, and it's been crazy. It's it's been really great. Like a lot more people have been listening to it than I thought would. Over the last couple of years, like I noticed that the podcasts that I was working for, Planet Money in particular, were just the numbers were, the, you know, audiences were growing and they were really, really enthusiastic. And it felt like there was an opportunity to sort of create a whole suite of programming that was aimed purely at digital listening.
And one thing I'm very interested in is your T-shirt project for Planet Money was a huge success. You raised a ton of money. And how do you think the brand for Planet Money helped with that? And do you think you can build a brand as strong as that for your own podcasts?
Well, I'm hoping. You know, that's what we're hoping to do. You know, and I think we can. You know, I think that but I think it's tricky, and I think you have to take great care to build that brand. But the Planet Money T-shirt project is something of a model for us. Like, I think there's opportunities to do that. So all the shows, you know, for the first year, we're looking to create at least three new shows. And the goal for each one of those shows is to do some kind of event like that, some sort of virtual event during the year where they can have some sort of integrated thing that has a story attached to whatever it is they're talking about, but that is also available for purchase, and if people want to buy it and feel closer to the story, they can buy it. So we'll see how replicable that is. But that, to me, the Planet Money T-shirt was a little bit of a revelation in that people weren't buying a T-shirt necessarily. I think what they were buying is a chance to feel connected to this really cool project that we were doing. People feel like more connected to that journey that we were going on. And so I think if we can sort of create experiences like that that people can buy into, we'll be onto something.
Alex, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you. All right.
Alex Bloomberg is the creator of a new podcast called Startup, which is about starting his own podcast company. It was Monday, Bloody Monday on Wall Street today, with the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P 500 all finishing in the red. Investors were concerned the global economy is getting worse rather than better, despite strong growth in the United States. In an effort to satiate Wall Street, the Federal Reserve announced they will continue to keep interest rates low to foster investment. After yesterday's Ebola scare at LAX, some travelers are concerned about the preventative measures being taken at airports. Kevin Mallory brings you this report from the city's busiest airport.
With two confirmed cases of Ebola in the U.S., many people are asking what can be done to stop a potential outbreak. Several airports have implemented screenings for international passengers traveling from Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. These airports are JFK in New York, Dulles in Washington, O'Hare in Chicago, Newark Liberty in New Jersey, and Hartsfield-Jackson in Atlanta. Beverly Crowder, who was traveling from Los Angeles to Houston, believes airports should be taking all of the necessary steps to prevent Ebola spread.
I think that all airports should be taking precautions regarding the screening of people that are coming in from Africa, and not just Africa, but other parts of the world.
Another LA resident is concerned whether LAX has taken the necessary precautions.
I mean, anything is going to scare you, you know, because, I mean, you have your family, you have your children, your grandchildren, and you're afraid of any contagious disease.
However, David L. Crippens, a professor of social work at USC, believes that airports, health departments, and federal officials are doing their best to contain the virus and has no reason to fear traveling.
No, why would I be? There's no reason to be scared. You can get Ebola, and it's only supposedly transmitted by fluid, not by air.
In fact, Crippens preaches the need to be patient.
What do we think, we can just snap our fingers and these things come up? No, life does not move like the internet. These are things that take time and people have to understand what we all must do.
According to UCSF graduate student Ben Cohn, who works in virology, there may be a positive that comes out of this threat.
If there is a silver lining to this, it does kind of bring public health issues into the consciousness of people.
With Ebola now being in America's conscience, there is no doubt that airports around the country will be on extremely high alert. Kevin Mallory, Annenberg Radio News.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
Ah.
I'm new to LA, and I love Chinatown. I've spent a lot of time in Chinatown in both Boston and San Francisco, and so I wanted to see what it was like in Los Angeles, and beautiful. Open air markets and all the things that you can kind of rummage around, looking at beautiful antiques and cheap imports, excellent food. So it's kind of fun seeing what you expect and what the surprises are. They're always wonderful surprises.
Sonic City!
The world of journalism is experiencing rapid changes. Alexis Lloyd, the creative director of the New York Times Research and Development Lab, visited USC to talk about innovations in the field. Christina Campodinico talked with her about the upcoming era of digital news.
I think that the future of journalism is a lot more complex than the past of journalism. So I think that one of the things that we see happening is that as new technologies and new platforms evolve, the conversation also becomes, what's going to win? You know, is mobile going to kill the internet and things like that? And I think the answer is that we're going to have this really increasingly complex ecosystem of places that we get media and information. There are all these new kinds of moments around news content that are not what we would traditionally think of as a news reading experience. So if it's getting a contextual alert about something on my wearable device, or if it's using the New York Times cooking app to make a recipe, or if it's reading long form content on my iPad, but more and more things will happen where my community alerts me to something that is happening that I then go to a different place to dive deeper into. The other night, there was a panel happening at a conference that was creating a lot of outrage among my colleagues and peers on Twitter that I hadn't even known was going on. And then I started to see all these tweets about it. And so then I went online and I sort of dived deeper and was like watching the event as it was unfolding. And I think that's something that is an experience around news that never would have happened a few years ago.
We've done a lot of innovation in journalism around the user or the reader experience. But you also talk about reporters having superpowers. What are some of those superpowers?
If you are doing reporting in a conflict area, then you want technology that's going to support you by allowing you to do things really securely, to protect yourself, to protect your colleagues, to have secure communications back to headquarters or with your sources. That becomes the thing that's of the utmost importance. Whereas if you're reporting from a live event or a breaking news event, you want to publish that information and you want to get that out as quickly as possible. Josh Hayner, who's one of our photojournalists, has a backpack that he's created that allows him to stream photos back to an editor at the Times immediately in real time so that we can publish photos from live events more quickly.
Journalists now are having to learn many types of languages, learning how to do video, radio, and coding even. What languages do you think journalists will need to speak in the future?
We have access to more and more data about the world around us, both the digital world and the physical world. We've sort of implemented more sensors that allow us to know more. You know, this doesn't mean that everybody needs to be a statistician. This doesn't mean that everybody needs to be a data scientist, but it means that journalists need to develop some basic familiarity with tools for asking questions of data in the same way that they would of people.
And now we check in with Brad Stryker to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
All right, thank you. Tonight, we take a look. Diane Sawyer paid a visit to Annenberg today. We have more on her visit tonight. And also, the Freshman 15 is something that we've all heard about, but tonight ATVN investigates. Is that real, or could it just be a myth?
And Brad, did you get a chance to meet Diane Sawyer today?
Unfortunately, I did not. I had class during the time when she came into the morning meeting at ATVN, so didn't have a chance.
Yeah, I think I was in the same boat. My Instagram feed, no joke, I think it was 5 consecutive selfies or similar pictures, all with Diane Sawyer. Brad, thanks for coming in.
No problem.
And that's it for this Monday. We had help today from Oriana Aniftos, Gabriel Cortez, Megan Coyle, Karina Halajian, Kevin Mallory, Kylie Morgan, Caitlin Plummer, Sarah Tiano, and Alana Victor. Our board operator is Derek Renfro. Sean Birch is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Andy Vasoyan. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Charlie McGovern.